Welcome back to the Transform Your Mind to Transform Your Life, the podcast. This is Life Coach Marina Young, and you're listening to Author's Corner, where we highlight and showcase local authors. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Delia Caramonte, author of Coping Courageously. And Dr. Caramonte and I are going to be talking on the topic, palliative care myths, what you don't know, and why it matters. So this is new content for the show. I'm going to be learning right along with you on this very important conversation, because most of us is going to be in this situation at some point in our lives. So welcome, Delia.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. All right, so let me give you guys a brief introduction and also the book summary. Dr. Caramonte is a board-certified physician specializing in family medicine, palliative medicine, and integrative holistic medicine. And here is a summary of the book. Are you stressed and exhausted because someone you love is seriously ill? Do you wish you felt less overwhelmed and more certain about how to help? Coping Courageously will be your guide. You will learn the most important things to do and not to do when a loved one is sick. Insider strategies for getting the best medical care. A simple and effective approach for managing your own stress. Skills to confidently talk about tough topics. You will be touched and inspired by the stories of Dr. Caramonte's patients. More importantly, Coping Courageously will give you the peace of mind, confidence, and tools to effectively support your loved one without depleting yourself. So as I started out by saying, yes, palliative care is the topic for a conversation. And if you don't know what that means, I'm going to start right off by having Dr. Delia explain what that is. So what exactly are we putting under the headline of palliative care?
I'm so glad that you asked that question, because so many people really don't understand what palliative care is, including other physicians. So palliative care is just symptom-focused care for people with serious illness and their families. So the population is anybody with a serious illness, even if they're trying to get cured. So if you get diagnosed with a cancer, but you're trying to get cured from that cancer and your doctors think that could be a possibility, palliative care is still appropriate because cancer is a serious illness. And what we do tends to end up in a couple buckets. One is symptom management. So if you're getting chemo and you feel tired or nauseous, that's a symptom. So helping manage that symptom. Number two is coping. If you have a serious illness, it's hard to cope, right? You might feel anxious or stressed out or depressed or not know how to talk to your kids about it or your family. And then the third thing is making medical decisions. So there's often decisions you have to make. Should I get a second opinion or try an experimental thing or, you know, get that surgery? All of that stuff falls in the bucket of palliative care, because our goal is to help people reduce suffering, reduce their physical suffering, their emotional suffering, and their spiritual or existential suffering.
All right. That is great. So I'm glad I asked the question, because my mind was going on elderly parents, chronic illness. I don't know. I mean, people that are close to expiration, but that's not what it means. Or does it encompass that as well?
Exactly. It encompasses that as well. So the mistake that most people make is thinking that palliative care is the same as end-of-life care or hospice.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's not. So if palliative care is like 10 feet long, hospice is the tiny end. So hospice is a part of palliative care, but most of palliative care is not hospice.
Okay. All right. So I'm glad that I asked that question. So to summarize, it's basically when someone is sick and they need care. And that, you know, my sister just went through cancer treatment and she went through chemotherapy. But I wouldn't say that she was under palliative care. She took her chemo and she really didn't have like someone come into the house and care for her. So I'm still trying to get an understanding of what that term means.
Yeah.
So let's say that someone is going through chemo and someone, you know, drives them and picks them back up and then they're home and they're able to fend for themselves. Does that still fall in that bucket?
Yeah. So palliative care, really, it's a specialty of physicians. Just like there are cardiologists or neurologists, there are palliative care physicians like me who have board certification in this specialty.
Okay.
And so if somebody is going through cancer treatment, even if they're hoping to get cured, but they have so much nausea from their chemo that the regular medicines that the oncologists give aren't working, or they're so overwhelmed about how to talk to their kids about it, they're not sure what to do. All of those things might make that person want to go to a palliative care doctor to have a visit for advice, just like you might go to, you know, to the rheumatologist if you have some joint pain, you want to find out, is there something you can do to help me? It's like that. And so it's like if somebody has an early cancer, maybe they might not use palliative care, or they might use a tiny bit. But if they have a more advancing cancer, maybe it's less curative care and more palliative care. So the basic idea is our focus as palliative care doctors and other clinicians is to reduce suffering. Now, your oncologist, their focus is getting rid of cancer. That's their focus. They may increase your suffering, right? Like they're going to give you chemo. That will increase your suffering, but they're doing it because they're trying to get rid of the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Palliative care is all about reducing suffering. While other doctors are potentially trying to get rid of your illness, our focus is reducing your suffering. So reduce your physical suffering, like pain or nausea. Reduce your emotional suffering, like stress or anxiety or depression, and then help you make decisions. So we're like an additive specialty in addition to whatever main doctors are managing your primary problem.
I love it. See, ask questions until you get it.
Because that's right.
I didn't get it. I now get it.
Great.
All right. I now get it. And you know what? I've never heard of that, to be quite honest. I've never heard that you can be having your regular doctor, like a cardiologist or an oncologist or whatever, and then go to another doctor called a palliative care doctor, and they would work in tandem together. I've actually never heard that. So
you got it right on.
Running along with me.
It's exactly what you said. Because many of the doctors, they're appropriately focused on the disease.
Right.
They're thinking about the disease. Palliative care on purpose is focused on the person and their family.
Okay. All right. So I get it. So I'm glad I asked the questions until I clarified it. So again, I might be asking the wrong question here, but does loved ones, so let's say we're going back to, let's say using our example, someone has cancer and it's terminal, right? So they know they're going to die. The doctor is giving them 6 months or something. So is the person that's caring for them at home, is that under the palliative care label? Or that is just basically the palliative care doctor is going to tell them how to care for the loved one. And
I love that you asked this.
And not deplete themselves. So you help the family members too. That's what I'm getting to. Long question.
Yes. I love that you asked that question, because in all the rest of medicine, the focus is the patient. But specifically in palliative care, our unit of care is the patient plus the family. On purpose. So our patient is the patient plus the family. And so on purpose, we care about not only the patient, but anybody that's part of the patient's circle. We say family, whoever the patient thinks is family, right? It could be their best friend or their neighbor. But the patient and their community, that is who we care for. So sometimes we may focus most of our attention on the family. Maybe the patient is not aware anymore, but we're still in there specifically for the family because they're part of our patient too.
Okay. All right. So one of the things you say is that you help the family care for the patient without depleting themselves. So what are some suggestions that you have for the listeners that can help them cope with that?
Yeah, I think that there are a few things, of course, but I would say one of the first and most important things is to let go of the idea of fixing everything. It is so exhausting and depleting for people to feel like they have to fix all the things. They have to fix the pain, they have to fix their loved one's sadness or fix their frustration or even, you know, magical thinking, fix their disease somehow, make them live longer somehow. And that is so depleting because there are things that can't be fixed. But what they can do instead is imagine themselves walking on a journey, on a path alongside their loved one. So they don't have to carry their loved one. They don't have to carry all their loved one's baggage. But they do so much important good by walking their loved one on this journey that they are on.
Okay, so that's a good one. Yeah, so yeah, especially if it's terminal, right? And
well, even chronic pain, anything, right? Like anytime you have a loved one who's struggling and you feel like, what do? I have to find the right thing. I have to fix it. Of course, we want to get good doctors. You want to get good care. You want to make good decisions. But there are things we can't fix, right? And we, when we deplete ourselves and make ourselves stressed out by trying to fix the unfixable, we actually become kind of a worse caregiver because now we're cranky. We're tired. We're not as good as a caregiver as we would be if we were filled up. So that whole idea of letting go of the things you can't fix and instead imagine walking beside someone, I think is important. So that's one. Two is boundaries. This is a hard one for people because you love your loved one and you want to be there for them. But the truth is we all have limits. And if our cup, our emotional spiritual cup gets emptied, we struggle and we're not as good as at caregiving as we would be otherwise. And, you know, if you have an aging parent, but you still have people at home, you might have a spouse at home or even kids at home, you can't let yourself get totally depleted or you can't care for anybody, including yourself. So the other mistake that people make that's related to boundaries is not getting help soon enough. So get help sooner, right? Like I can't necessarily be there 24/7. I have to go to work. I've got kids. I got to go home and clean the house. But you can hire people if you have the resources to do that, to be there long before you need it. People are like hanging on by their fingernails saying, I don't need help yet. But the truth is get help way before you need it. And if you can't afford to hire like a visiting nurse, you can barter services. You know, you can do stuff for somebody else in exchange for them spending time with your loved one. If the loved one has an extra room, sometimes you can let somebody stay there in exchange for caring for them. You can have a teenager come for not as much money as a visiting nurse. So there are all kinds of ways. You can ask neighbors, people from your faith community, maybe more distant relatives who maybe they can't come and sit by the loved one's bedside, but maybe they could cough up a little money to hire a few hours of a visiting nurse. So I would say get more help than you think you need and get it sooner than you think you need it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we have that situation right now in my husband's family. Right. Yeah. Same thing. But you know, as you were talking, I thought of something. But a lot of times people struggle with that because they're saying, you know, my mom or my dad is not going to go into a nursing home. What's your advice on that?
Well, I think the first thing is to try to gather as much help as you can, because sometimes people hang on by their fingernails till the last second, till they get so burnt out, and then they throw up their hands and feel like the only option is to go into a nursing home. And so sometimes that is the right option to go into a nursing home, but sometimes it might not be. But you're much more likely to be able to keep them at home if you keep your own cup full so that you can keep going for longer, you know?
Yeah.
So get more help, gather other loved ones, ask the neighbors, ask book club people, church people, synagogue people, like cast a much wider net. People sometimes will just be like, well, I only have one sister and she won't help, as though that's the only option.
Right.
But if you can get five different people to spend 2 hours a week at your loved one's bedside, that's 10 hours you don't have to pay for, and you can take a break and go shopping or take a shower or take a nap, right? So it's definitely worth trying to keep someone at home if you want to. Mm-hmm. If you do it this way, you've got to get help. But then sometimes it is the right decision to put someone in a facility. And then there are ways to pick the best facility. And then the other thing I would say is, if you do have a loved one in a facility, ideally you show up there. Somebody shows up there at least once a week.
Yeah, you've got to once a week.
Every day would be great.
They have somebody, because if you don't, then not only is the patient, you know, going in depression because nobody is visiting them, but then I would think the nurses, you know, or whoever is looking for them would get a little bit more slack because you're sure you don't have anybody. Very good information there on that.
It does make a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. So our conversation today is really, what are some of the palliative care myths? You know, what you don't know and why it matters. So can you share some of those?
Sure. I think the biggest myth we did touch on a little bit, which is that it's the same thing as end-of-life care, which it is not. And the reason that matters is when people think that, including other doctors, they think, oh, it's not time for palliative care because we're still actively doing treatment. But what that means is that is increasing the suffering of the patient and the family when it doesn't have to be that way, right? So, you know, if you have a loved one who keeps going to the hospital, maybe they have cancer or had a stroke and they're going back and forth from the hospital, that's a perfect time to get a palliative care person, because they may say, hey, we can make your pain better, or we can make your nausea better, or we can make your constipation better so your loved one doesn't have stomach pain all the time and so they don't want to go out to lunch with you, right? Mm-hmm. We can notice, hey, I think your loved one might be depressed, and I think nobody is treating that, and that's why they're staying in bed all the time. Let's see if we can treat that depression. Maybe they'll want to go back out to lunch with their friends, right? Because the whole purpose of palliative care is to reduce suffering. So it always cracks us up when people say, oh, it's too early.
Right.
It's never too early to reduce somebody's suffering, right?
Right. Well, because they're under the misguided impression that it's end-of-life care.
That it's end-of-life care.
We're talking about, right?
Right, which it's not. Exactly. It's not.
And even the patient might say, what are you talking about? I'm dying yet.
Right. Exactly.
Not even push back.
Right. And if you get cured, we're thrilled for that. We are not the dying people, but we are the help make this difficult medical situation better people.
All right. So that's one. Is there any other myths?
Absolutely. There's another myth, which is that if you see a palliative care doctor or provider, that you have to somehow stop taking your medicines, or that they're going to take away your treatments, which is not at all true. So you can have palliative care even while you're having treatments that you're hoping will prolong your life. There's hospice is different. There are some changes in hospice, but palliative care is not the same as that. So you can be seeing all your doctors, getting really aggressive care, and also see a palliative care doctor, because one is not against the other.
Right.
You know, if you have a serious illness and you're trying to live as long as possible, good for you.
The team, from what you're saying.
It's part of the team.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. I love that. They like that word these days, teams, you know. So it's part of your care team.
Exactly. So, right. Yeah.
That's amazing. All right. So we'll stop there. You guys need to learn some more myths, then you can get a copy of Dr. Caramonte's book. Now, I do want to ask this question, because one of the things you talk about in your book is how to have tough conversations. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I can imagine is if the conversation that you need to go to hospice care because there's nothing more I can do for you. So what, you know, tell us how you as a palliative care doctor helps the suffering of the person that knows this is the end, and the family that's caring for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things that I think is really important is to be open and honest about what's going on. And so sometimes people make the mistake, often family members, of if their loved one says something like, hey, you know, the doctor said that next chemo is probably not going to work. It'll make me feel really sick. Maybe I shouldn't do it. The family members sometimes will say, don't say that. No, 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 don't say that. You have to be positive. Everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And they mean it with love. But what it does to the person, the patient, is it gives them the message that that feeling is not welcome here. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about that here. Mm-hmm. And now it doesn't take it away from them. So it just leaves them alone with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Rather than being able to share it with their family.
Share it, right. That's good. That's a good point. That's a good point. So what you're saying is, so the doctor has come to the conclusion that you're, for instance, we just had a family member, it's not a family member, it's a family friend die of cancer. He was too old or too sick to take care. So he died within like a couple months after the diagnosis of the cancer.
I'm sorry.
So, and he was at one point says, what are we going to do about this? I want to live. So let's say somebody says that to you and you know that it's the end for them. So what do you say?
So I would say that I want that for you too. On the one hand, that's, let's all pray for that. So none of us is making decisions. The universe, God, whatever your worldview is, makes decisions. So what I would say is let's make space for two situations at the same time. On the one hand, let's pray for cure if that's what you're hoping for. Let's pray for that. Absolutely. On the other hand, let's also prepare for what might be happening based on what your doctor said. So what your doctor said is that it doesn't seem like chemotherapy is going to help you anymore. So sometimes we can actually make people worse with chemotherapy. We can even shorten their life with chemotherapy. So just because we can give you a medicine doesn't mean we should if it's going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. So your doctor said that maybe the chemotherapy they have would hurt you rather than help you. So let's not do that. Let's instead do really aggressive symptom management so that you can be as well as you possibly can be and spend time with your grandkids that you told me that you like. Spend time with your wife because I know you love her so much. So what are the symptoms that are bothering you now that's making it hard to live your life? Oh, you're having pain? Here are some things that we can do about that. Or you're having trouble sleeping? Here are some things that we can do about that. What's really important to you? Tell me what's really important to you. And let's make sure that we set it up so that you get to experience what's really important to you. Your grandkids, do you want to call them in? Do you want to take a picture all together? Do you want to have a party? Like, what would be important to you? Because you told me your family is so important. Let's talk about what that could look like.
That's beautiful. I love that. I'm glad I asked the question. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, people that are listening about what that's great, great information. Because a lot of times you don't know what to do. So here is a doctor telling you this is the best way to handle it. And I love that. Yeah, let's pray for that. Because, you know, that's basically what the other person said. They asked me, he says, pray for him. Right. And pray. And at the same time, you know, like you said, prepare and be comfortable and stuff like that. So I love that. All right. So tell us about your book, Coping Courageously, A Heart-Centered Guide for Navigating a Loved One's Illness Without Losing Yourself. Why did you write it? And what do you want readers to walk away with after reading?
Thank you for that question. I wrote this book because I noticed something in my palliative care practice, which is that even with the same illness, the same severity of illness, some families struggled. They separated from each other. They couldn't talk about things. There was tension in the family. They were stressed out all the time. And then other families with the exact same diagnosis connected, hugged, cried together, got closer, you know, wrote books together, looked at family albums together, went on special trips together, and took this special time and made themselves closer. And I really wondered, wow, what are those guys doing? the families that were coping well. And if I teach those skills to these other guys, will they suffer less? And of course, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
And so given that, the book sort of wrote itself because it's a bunch of stories of my patients illustrating things that helped so that people can read the book and maybe see themselves in the people who are struggling, but learn the skills to turn it into a more positive experience so that they don't waste this time. Because nothing is more heartbreaking to me than knowing that somebody in the family doesn't have that long and there's all kinds of chaos and disconnection in the family when you just should be the most close. And mostly it's because people just don't know what to do. You know, nobody teaches you how to be a caregiver. And then all of a sudden, someone in your family gets sick and you're thrown into the most difficult thing you've ever done with no skills. No one ever taught you what to do. And you don't have much time to figure it out. And I really wanted people to get the skills so that they can figure it out.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So how does someone find a palliative care doctor? Is it, are you guys all over? I know, whereabouts are you?
I'm in Baltimore. But yeah, they're all over. So you can just Google palliative care in your town. Sometimes, I want to say this so people don't get scared. Sometimes hospices have a palliative care program, but it's not hospice, but they just, they're like the umbrella under which. So the thing might be called like Joe's Hospice, but don't be scared. If it says palliative care, it's not hospice.
Right. Well, listen, this is what this, you know, podcasts are about. They're information, right? So now that someone's listening and you know, we attract things that are that you know, someone might be listening to this today and don't have this situation, but tomorrow they do. Because that is how the universe works, right?
Yeah,
we attract the things that you need. So someone might be going looking for this palliative care and see hospice, and they're saying, "No, we're not ready for that yet, but we do need to get my loved ones comfortable and you know, suffering less." And not only the patient, but the care team as well.
Exactly.
So that is beautiful. Yes, I learned so much from this conversation. Thank you for being on the show. How can the listeners connect with you? Do you have a website? What's your social handles? And of course, your book is available on Amazon, I would assume, right?
Yep, it sure is. And yes, I have a website. The probably easiest one to remember is caregivingishard.com. We'll get you to some free resources from me. And Coping Courageously is available on Amazon, as you said, also copingcourageously.com. It's also available there. You can find me on LinkedIn, my name, Delia Caramonte, and Facebook, Delia.Caramonte, Instagram, Dr. Caramonte. It's a hard one to spell, C-H-I-A-R-A-M-O-N-T-E. But if you Google
that's it, I have links out. So don't worry about that. Yeah. So yeah, my listeners know that I will have a transcript of our conversation on the show page. The show page has changed a little bit recently. It's now myhelps.us instead of the blog. I just went to one site. So myhelps.us, I'll have a transcript of my conversation with Dr. Caramonte and links to her book, links to her website, links to her social media handles, so that you can get some more information on this topic. Because as I started off the show saying, we will all go through some form of this, right? We all are going to have elderly parents. We're all going to have someone that's sick, that needs care. That is part of our life experience. So it's good information to know what to do. You know, and sometimes they say you shouldn't learn to swim when you're drowning. So now get all the information now.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to steal that. That's so good.
So you get the information now. So you'll be all, you know, read up when the time comes. So thank you, Delia, for being on the show. Thank you for sharing this very, very important topic. I thank you guys for tuning in to Author's Corner. And this is why I do it. You know, I want to highlight and showcase, you know, books that, because people write books so that they can share information. Information is power. Knowledge is power if you use it. right? So thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Delia, for being on the show.
Thank
you. If you're listening to this on iTunes, we'd love for you to, you know, subscribe and, you know, leave a review. If you're listening to, if you're watching this on YouTube, we'd love for you to leave a comment, maybe share your experiences, and also subscribe. So any last words, Delia, as we before we wrap up?
I think the one thing that is important for all of us is to hold space for two different situations at the same time, for all of us, no matter where we are in life. You can be angry and grateful. You can be grieving and hopeful. And I think that is so important. And that's part of why people don't use palliative care. They don't do that. They feel like, well, in order to be hopeful, I can't even imagine anything worse. Let's just make space for all the feelings. It's okay to have all of the feelings. You can love your person and be angry at them. You can be caregiving with all your heart and also not love it all the time. All of that is okay.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. Well, because people didn't understand what it meant before. So now they do.
That's right.
Oh, that's basically what you did. You increased our knowledge, including mine, because I came on board thinking palliative care is hospice care. And you have, you know, that's why I asked all those questions up front so that I can understand what it is. And now I understand basically what it is. So thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Delia, for sharing this important message with us. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in to Author's Corner. Delia, thanks again. Until next time, namaste.